Hello, regular Drews.
Hi, everyone.
So we're peak spooky Halloween time right now. Mm-hmm. Just a couple more weeks until Halloween. And I think literally this episode is coming out like right when we get back from the convention.
Right-ish.
So we'll be hot off the high of that. After being in Salem, I can only imagine how Halloween-y it's going to feel. I'm so excited.
Yes.
But so this will kick off our little Halloween month time here. We get to talk about the Her Interactive game number 33, Midnight in Salem.
Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
I learned that from the Nancy Drew detective.
Okay, go.
You think you can follow the clues and solve the case of the missing condiment, Nancy Drew?
Because I've read every Nancy Drew mystery ever written.
Nancy, please tell me you're joking.
Wow, you suck at this Nancy Drew stuff. You should get a new hobby.
My name is Carson Drew, and this is my assistant, Nancy.
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 Nancy
Drew.
It's curtains for you, Miss Drew.
Nancy.
Nancy Drew strikes again.
Regular Nancy Drew.
We have a lot of thoughts, just all over the place. Thoughts. So, Cora, we've previously kind of spoken about Midnight in Salem in our History of Her episode. What episode number was that?
Number 30, I believe.
30. Yes, that's correct. And so I think if you want to hear about, you know, kind of the history of the development of that game, you should probably go take a listen to that, because it was not great.
It did take 4.5 years for this game to come out from, you know, the time that they announced that they were starting to work on it. And it should not have taken that long by any means for the product that they actually released. So it's a very bumpy 4.5 years for sure for this fandom.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we talked about this in that episode too, but a lot of people who, you know, play video games are like, that doesn't seem like a super long time for something to be in development. And it's not, except for the fact that previously Nancy Drew games had been released like 2 games a year. So it's just a big change from the history of the development of the series of games. And for a product that is not, personally, in my opinion, on the same caliber as the rest. So, yeah.
it shouldn't have taken that long for, like you were saying, it's, you know, relatively in terms of other video games, that's not a long time, but for Nancy Drew games that usually took like 8 months to be made from start to finish, and they'd already made half of a game by the time number 32 came out, and then they trashed it, and then like 2 years later started over working on it, and then took another 2 years to actually finish it. And when it came out, it was unfinished, which is
right.
Even funnier. So
that's just the thing, is that to take so long and then deliver a game that is so buggy and so poorly like edited, like is disappointing. But that's just a little snippet of what,
yeah.
what the kind of early, what the development of the game was like. But you can go listen to episode 30 and hear more about that. But today we're going to talk about the actual game as we played it. But Corey, I know you couldn't even play it because it doesn't work on the computer.
Yeah, so I should preface this and also it doubles as my first complaint about the game is that... they tried to make it so technologically sophisticated that unless you have like a very fancy gaming PC, this game does not work as intended on most computers. Like, it will still play. It's just even buggier unless you have, like, the really fancy computer that can process really, really quickly what it needs to be. So my laptop is from 2012. It does not work on my laptop. I have played this game once when it first came out, but I had to borrow someone else's computer in order to play that. So for this recording that we're doing, I just watched Argo Fump's playthrough of his 2022 streamathon that he did. So
gotcha. Yeah.
Thank you. It's really for that, annoying Argo Fump. Yes, thank you, Argo Fump, because I also don't really want to go back and play it because I really just didn't enjoy it the first time. The changes to it, the navigation and stuff made me absolutely nauseous when I was playing it. So watching like a playthrough of it is pretty much the only way for me to experience it now.
So I have to say that I was not excited to go back and play it either. And I don't know why. So I started playing it on like one evening and then I stopped. And then the next day I picked it back up again and I couldn't stop playing it. I played it through the entire day and finished it in that second day.
Very nice.
Now, I don't know why, because I couldn't say that, like, it was a super enjoyable experience for me. Maybe it was just that I wanted to get it over with was part of it. But I definitely, like, binge played it in a way that I didn't expect. I thought it was going to have to, I was going to have to, like, schedule time for me to do it because it would be, like, pulling teeth. Yeah. But it wasn't that bad this time around. And I do wonder. That's good. So, and this, because this made me really curious, because it was that was definitely not my experience in my first playthrough. I hated it in my first playthrough. And so when I bought the game, I waited until it came out on Steam for me to buy it, because I didn't pre-order it or do any of that mishigas, because I was just like, I don't trust that they're actually going to deliver the game. And I'm glad I made that decision. Yeah. But so I bought it on Steam. And part of me wonders, and I don't know if you know or have any information about this, Corey, but I wonder if they went back and made updates to the game.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Because my experience was much smoother.
Okay, that's good.
I did have some glitches early on, but by the time I got through some of it, it seemed to have resolved itself, and the navigation felt smoother and the puzzles were much, much easier. So, like, 'cause you know how, like, in the, ghost hunting,
that's the worst one.
It's so fiddly. I didn't have that experience this time. It was really easy.
I bet you maybe they did patch it or something.
Yeah. And so it wasn't that bad. The navigation was not that bad. It didn't make me sick this time.
That's good.
And I don't know if it's just that I am less sensitive to that kind of camera movement now, or if they truly made some tweaks. But
if they did.
I know. Or, you know, maybe I'm just a new person now and, you know, I experienced it a little differently, but I didn't hate it that much. I mean, it definitely doesn't hold a candle to the previous Nancy Drew games still, for me, in my opinion. It is just not the same kind of game, and it's a kind of game that I prefer much less. But also I don't, I didn't hate it as much as I used to, which really surprised me. Especially after all, you know, these years that we've been doing this podcast, I'm like, you know, we've read so many Nancy Drew books. We've played so many games. We've talked about so many shows and movies and all of the stuff that I feel like I've become super critical of everything Nancy Drew. And so I was just really surprised. I was like, oh, well, actually I don't hate it anymore. What?
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's still a lot of things about it that I do hate. Just not everything.
Well, that's good. I'm glad it was better this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So I read somewhere that this game is supposed to be based off of the witch tree symbol.
I don't see it.
Which we've covered.
I've read that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And how? They're set in two different places. The plot is not similar at all. Is it just because it has witch in the title and Midnight in Salem is kind of about witches?
I think that's the extent of it, yeah.
There weren't even really any witches in the witch tree symbol.
Right.
Well, there was a witch tree.
Right.
So yeah. It's not. It's actually...
yeah.
So there's no way. There's no way.
I think that for their licensing purposes, they have to tie it to a book somehow. And so I think they just picked one and told Simon and Schuster, hey, that's what we're going with.
Wow.
I mean, we've had other books that we've read that's supposedly the inspiration for a game, and then it's literally nothing like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised, because there's other ones that are just as unrelated as this, but I don't see it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. But so that's, I found that little tidbit, interesting. But kind of just generally, my feelings about the game, I've talked about it a little bit, but I think, in general, I like the concept of the game. I think the idea of it is interesting. And I think that in general, the art design of the game is good and I like it.
It was a good concept.
Yes.
It was definitely a good concept to start off with. What we were promised at the end of Sea of Darkness, I think, would have been fantastic. And then it changed a lot.
Right. Yes. And the execution is just where the actual, you know, end result isn't good. But when you play it, I think I can see what they were trying to do. And I can see, like, the structure, which is also kind of what makes it so bad, right? Is because I can see that and I can see exactly where they've messed up.
Right.
And I can see what it could have been had the right decisions and the right things been done. But I can't fault it for, like, not, you know, being a good idea, right? I think in general it was a good idea. I just think it just couldn't achieve what they wanted to. Not that they didn't want to do the right things. And so honestly, I think that that is a big, that's a good thing. Like, I think a lot of the times I can start to think about, like, Her Interactive as a company now and, like, just being, like, completely away from, like, what the original conception of Nancy Drew and the Nancy Drew games were. Mm-hmm. But after I replayed Midnight in Salem this time, I don't necessarily feel that way. I think that they have a good idea and they have a strong concept. It's just that they can't necessarily execute it, which of course is a big problem. But I feel less bad about the direction of future games after replaying it this time.
Sure.
Yeah. So what about you, Corey?
We'll see. It's okay. So one of the big complaints, not the only complaint by any means, but one of the big complaints with this game is the graphics and how horrible they are. I'll say I am not a gamer. I can't speak for the entire Nancy Drew community. I can count on one hand the number of video games that I've played that are not the Nancy Drew game series. So I really, you know, I don't play these games for the graphics. I play to explore and find clues, solve puzzles. You know, like, it's still a fun game for me, even if the graphics aren't the greatest. The original 32, they weren't the best graphics either. The art is a whole different story. Mm-hmm. The art was absolutely gorgeous, breathtaking in some cases. I feel like, I don't know, with the graphics, like, I can definitely excuse the bad graphics.
Mm-hmm.
If they're still trying to accomplish the great things about what made the original 32 great. Because again, I admit the graphics is not what made the original 32 good games, and it's not mm-hmm. why I like them. It felt like they were less trying to say, you know, we're taking a game that is, you know, we're trying to get people that are already fans of the Nancy Drew books and get them interested in the games. This felt like they were trying to reach and say, let's improve our graphics, let's mm-hmm. make ourselves compete with the video mm-hmm. game industry, not just, you know, the Nancy Drew fandom and the franchise. It's like, let's make a game that's going to get video game fans interested in Nancy Drew rather than Nancy Drew fans interested in video games. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was a huge misstep because I feel like the graphics, like the intention there, like this game looks silly if you compare it to, again, I don't know a lot of the video games, but if you're trying to like get a Skyrim fan interested in Nancy Drew, they're going to laugh their heads off at this game. And then you take a Nancy Drew fan and it's like, well, we took out the like fun exploration part of it because exploration is actually now really difficult. And it just like navigation wise, it's going to be hard to move around and do all the fun things that you wanted to do from the old game. So I just, I felt like they were trying to shift their audience, which is definitely necessary. I mean, it's a very rapidly evolving industry. They have to try to keep up with the fans and meet people where they're at and what they want to see. But it felt like they were trying to have a foot in both camps and then just ended up not really pleasing either side, if that makes sense. Not that it has to be like a, you have to be one or the other, like you can only be a video game fan or you can only be a Nancy Drew fan. Not, you know, not that it has to be separate at all, but it just, it felt like they were trying to go in a direction that just absolutely didn't work for what they were trying to do here.
Yeah,
I don't know if any of that made sense, but
definitely, it definitely made sense to me. And I think that sounds really true. I mean, I have played a lot of video games. I've played Skyrim, you know, I wouldn't call myself a gamer, but I do buy a lot of games on Steam that I play, a lot of point and click games, a lot of mystery-esque games, puzzle games, things like that. I've played a lot of them. And it definitely, this game is not just not on par with like the end result is not a compelling, it's not a compelling game. No. Even considering like, you know, it maybe not being similar to Nancy Drew, the original Nancy Drew games, it's just, it just can't compete with the other ones. It can't.
Right.
And so I definitely, it definitely feels true that they were trying to kind of do both and they can't do either then. And I can, I mean, like I can feel real, I can feel sympathy for that. Right. Like, because like you said, like it's a changing industry. I'm sure with like, I don't know their financial situation, but I can only imagine that I'm sure that they were struggling and trying to evolve to be able to compete and make enough money to survive. You know, I'm sure it's incredibly challenging and I can understand the need to try to pivot or try to improve or change things somehow to be able to get to earn more money. But yeah, it just, it's just sad that it's just not, it wasn't achievable. But it's almost like firing all of your staff is a good
maybe
way
that was part of the problem
to to do that. But I, you know, I don't know. We don't know what was going on the inside of that company at the time. I can't speak to whether or not those decisions were good or bad. I just
I can speculate.
I can speculate, but I. But I don't know. So it's just a shame that this is the result. And I hope for more good things in the future, you know, with the development of this new game that they're doing. But as far as what I've seen, so this is not about, I shouldn't start talking about game 34. As far as what I've seen, I'm not super excited, but you never know.
I have played I have played some of the Sherlock Holmes games by Frogwares, and I feel like that level is what they're going for here. That level of like that type of graphics, that type of navigation and motion and everything. I feel like that's the audience they were trying to reach. Whereas like previous to now, we've been more comparing like the older games to like Detective Barbie than we have been to like, you know, something that would be compatible for like PlayStation or something. So I'm really glad personally that they chose to include Deirdre and the Hardy Boys as in-game characters in this. I almost feel like it was more than necessary to kind of anchor us back to the original 32, because imagine if they hadn't been in this game, or imagine if our only like recognizable characters, especially with the change of Nancy, we have less familiarity with the game. In that sense as well, if we'd only had Nancy's friends as like phone characters or something, I think it really would have felt even less like a Nancy Drew game, that it was just like this like almost copycat version. It feels more like a Miss Clue than it does like the original 32, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. It definitely does.
We should talk about Game 34 a little bit at the end. Sure. With the teaser that they leave for, you know, the phone call of how Nancy ends things with the mystery. So
yeah.
we'll definitely talk about that.
We'll talk about it then. Mm. But let's get going because there's just a lot to say.
Yeah, there is. And I'll ramble all day about
I can already feel myself starting to go, so I'm going to stop. But so let's do three words quickly. And I think that one of our three words has to be puzzle boxes because literally that's their favorite thing. It's just puzzle box after puzzle box after puzzle desk, puzzle thing. Just like, but like, but it's very specific. It's a very specific type of puzzle. And it's like a puzzle box puzzle. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
And then, I don't know, man. It just feels kind of amorphous to me.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad.
Very disjointed. And
it's kind of vague. I mean, Deirdre, I guess we could say Deirdre, because Deirdre just like, just uncomfortably always there, like always literally right behind you. You turn around and like, oh my God, it's like, what did you get there?
Another critique of the game, that it shouldn't be as creepy as it is. Everything feels very jagged. Like,
jagged. Let's use that word.
Everything's jagged. Yeah.
That's a good word. So like puzzle boxes, Deirdre and jagged.
Yeah.
So that's what it feels like. Yeah.
That works. I can't explain why jagged is the word, but like nothing is smoothed over visually or just conceptually. Yeah. It's
It's disjointed, but it's like abrasively disjointed.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway. So a couple things about the game mechanics of this is for some reason we have changed the names of our difficulty levels from the previous games from junior and senior detective to amateur and master sleuth.
Okay.
Why? I don't like it because I don't like change. But other than that, of course, we have a very different game engine here. We've done a big game engine switch from what they used previously to now Unity. And so the navigation is entirely different. It is no longer just, I mean, it is still point and click, but you can, you're not just seeing just like one screen that you can click on. You can kind of zoom all the way around to see everything around you.
It's fully 3D now. Yeah.
Fully 3D. Right.
Even the objects, you can rotate anything you pick up too, which is, I liked that touch. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. As far as the objects go, I agree. As far as like the environment, not so much. Because I feel like it made it hard to know what I'm looking at.
Very difficult.
Because, or know where I'm going or know everything that I'm supposed to be seeing because I can see a lot more, right? With an object, it's cool because, yeah, when I get an object, I want to be able to look at everything. And if there's something hidden on an object, that's cool to be able to find more manually, right? But, like, when I'm trying to figure out where I'm supposed to be going or what is interactable in an area, I don't want to have a question about that. I don't want to accidentally miss something because I didn't turn far enough to be able to see it. That feels difficult, and that feels like not a fun way to experience the game. If I miss something on an object because I didn't turn it all the way around and look at it, I feel like that's acceptable. But having to like go to all of these different places and then just maybe accidentally miss something that I was supposed to click on, no me gusta, you know?
The first time I played that happened to me when I was, I was in the Hawthorne house. I couldn't proceed for the longest time. I was just wandering around the entire game map for hours looking for what I didn't realize I'd missed. And
the little
ended up
thing. Yeah. I did that this time too. I was like, what is it that I have to click on? But the fact that you have to click on the, I knew it was something with that cabinet, but I was like, I see what it is that I'm supposed to be doing, but why won't it let me click on it? And it's because you have to turn around and look at it through the mirror first. That's wild.
Well, I was looking through the mirror, and I just hadn't rotated Nancy. Like, Nancy had to take half of a step to the right to be able to look at it from the right angle. And so I could see it and just, like, never managed to rotate Nancy enough to make her comment on it. And the comment is what triggers the next thing.
Right.
So I saw it, and I was like, I know I need to go over there and open the thing, but the thing won't open. Because I didn't rotate the angle enough. And even Arglefump had trouble with it. Like, you can't pick up an object unless you've, like, walked around it and pick it up from behind. Otherwise, Nancy won't register that it's there. It's like, there's no reason for that. Like, it's not,
yeah.
It's not supposed to be that
way. That's just poor design. Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah. So that's different. Also, kind of like our whole interface on our screen here. So our inventory is down mm-hmm. in a different place. And we still have a cell phone. On our cell phone, we have a checklist, phone contacts, and then some text messages as well that we can get, which I thought was interesting. I liked the text message aspect in this game, because I feel like historically in Nancy Drew games, we have had some text message like mm-hmm. things or emails on like a BlackBerry, but we've never actually like used that, right? So you can't mm-hmm. text somebody in a previous Nancy Drew game. Sometimes you'll have text messages, but you never like text somebody. But I did feel like in this game, sometimes Nancy's phone will go off and it'll, you know, scroll up or whatever, and we'll go through a text conversation that you can have with like Deirdre or like another character or something. And I actually really enjoyed that. It felt really seamless and it felt natural and it felt like a good way to update kind of the contact version of the game. I do wish that it had been integrated more like we do our normal phone calls where you can choose what you want to respond to someone with. Because
cool.
I felt like that would have been a natural way to kind of keep the structure of some of the previous games mm-hmm. and kind of update it a little bit for the modern right player.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's not really like that. You just kind of run through the dialogue of however is supposed to update, you know, the storyline of the game, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay. But overall, I thought it was good. I thought that was a good addition.
Yeah.
But mostly that's what's different about the game is the way that you navigate, the way that you interact with objects and kind of our little dashboard of tools, right? Is the premise of the game. It's a very interesting one. And it's because we start the game in Austria for some unclear reason. Nancy is writing a letter to Ned or a message to Ned. It's unclear. Explaining that Carson wants Nancy to pick up this old relic called the Book of Apologies. And it's apparently from the 17th century from this place called Mosum Castle. It's not spelled like it sounds. It's Mosum, not Mosum. So if you have the subtitles up, which I did because I need subtitles these days, I'm too old to not have them on. It's spelled like Mosum, but it's Mosum. So anyway, and that's all before we even get into the game. So it's like completely random. Just like, okay, so we're going to Austria to get this random relic and that's it. It's just an errand. That's how we're starting the game. And
I'm not sure what this was about other than that most of this game was outsourced to a company in Austria.
Oh,
so
I didn't know
I don't
that.
Know if it's just like a little Easter egg to, you know, reference the developers or I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely weird and random, but it's not the fact that it starts in Austria that I hate so much. It's the fact that like we get no reference to an overall mystery before we start. Mm-hmm. You know, where's my case file? Where's my briefing on where it is we're going and what we're doing that hints at something larger mm-hmm. going on? It doesn't make me excited to jump into the game. It doesn't make me curious, except for like what? You know, like I think it was just a bad way to start the game.
We're going there to get something that's going to be very relevant and like that this mystery is going to center around this mm-hmm. thing, but there's no mystery yet. We're just going there to get this thing so that it can be stolen so that we can solve the mystery of who stole it.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
Yeah. It just feels like this all should have happened in River Heights and it all should have been like a cutscene prior to us going straight to Salem. We never should have gone to Austria in the first place. We should have had Nancy, you know, get a call or a message from Carson being like, hey, I need you to grab this thing for me or whatever. And then before we can even get there, we find out that it's been stolen. And then, you know, we get introduction to Salem through some other way. and then we go straight to Salem. It's just completely unnecessary, I think.
For me, I think that this part of the game was literally just like, we're going to make a tutorial section.
Right.
For like how to use the new navigation features in the game, and decided to put it in Austria for some reason.
Hmm.
And another absolutely massive failing for me for this game is the educational aspect of it, because so many of the previous games really tried to be educational, at least on at least in some ways for the historical aspects of the games. It could have worked for me if somehow we'd tied it into the Salem witch trials and made it more educational, because obviously the witch trials were massive in Europe and even in different ways than they were here in America. So it would have been nice to like, oh, we're talk here investigating. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Talk about the historical part of the witch trials and then learn more about how things got, you know, got started and how things developed in America. But we just, we didn't touch on that at all. We just are there, and we learn later that the book is there because it got auctioned off, and or not auctioned off, but this museum decided to take these artifacts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But why? I'm sure there's hundreds of other museums in the U.S. that would have also taken this same artifact. You know, it doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, the very fact that Nancy is there to begin with is random, too. Right. We never learn what she's already in Austria for some reason. Like, on vacation, it's alluded to. And Carson, like, says, and, like, you can read back in the text messages in Nancy's phone, Carson says that he's, like, interrupting her vacation with his errand.
How but is this so, Carson's errand? It's not like he has, like, a relevant case or anything that he's also working on right now that's going to tie in later somehow. It doesn't.
No. And so it's also like, so why is Nancy in Austria? What is how is Carson involved in this? Why is this thing in Austria at all? It's all very random. And also, like, those questions never get answered. So it's not like it's, ooh, this is a mysterious. It's like, no, right. It's just completely like, what's the word? The words aren't coming easy today.
That's okay.
It's just irrelevant. Completely like, yeah, irrelevant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So great. But so that's the start of the game, right? That's the premise of the game. That's what we get at the beginning to get us excited and wet our whistle. And then we jump right in. Do you want me to start or do you want to start?
You can take it, sure.
Okay. So when we start in the game, we're able to start moving around. We're in this dark room. And this person named Dr. Elizabeth Hurst is outside of this room that we don't know what room we're in yet, because we can't tell because it's dark. And she doesn't want to come into the room. Presumably
because they didn't want to animate her.
They didn't want to animate her. Yep. But she gives the reason because it's like creepy and spooky. And so she doesn't want to come in because she's scared. But she works here. So seems like a big issue for her, but whatever, personal problem. And we have to like open this window, and she'll tell us that the room that we're in is this is where they keep all of this Judge Seawall's things. Judge Seawall is the guy who wrote this Book of Apologies, and we don't even know that the Book of Apologies actually exists, but if it does exist, it's here in this room. And so we have to try to find it for Carson because Carson needs it or wants it for some reason. So that's why we're here.
No one knows if it actually exists, but if it does exist, we know for a fact that it's physically here.
Yeah.
Schrodinger's Book of Apologies.
And she says that if it's anywhere, it's probably in his desk, which is locked and they haven't been able to get into it. Seems like this museum who inherited this stuff tried really hard to use the stuff. Guess not. Anyway, this is, like you were saying, where we get our little tutorial on how to, like, navigate and move around and explore. And we can kind of explore this room. And throughout, we learn a little bit about Mosem Castle, that this was a site of some of the awful witch trials in Austria 17 years prior to the Salem witch trials. But that's really all we learn about it. We don't learn anything about what those witch trials were like or about. That's all that we get, just that little tidbit. And after the Salem witch trials, this Judge Seawall dude died and willed his stuff to like any museum who would take it. And because that this I guess, museum existed because of the Austrian witch trials. And since that was a little bit in the past, I guess they were established enough and they wanted his stuff. I don't know. Somehow this museum ended up with his stuff. And that this guy, Judge Seawall, allegedly wrote this book, The Book of Apologies, which is a ledger containing all of the names of the accused witches from the Salem witch trials. And apparently he wrote it because he felt guilty about his involvement and convictions that he made throughout the course of the Salem witch trials. And so he wrote it to make amends. I don't know how writing a book makes amends, but I guess you're naming people that you victimized. So maybe in that regard. But yeah, interesting. But so this desk, it turns out, is a puzzle desk that we have to unlock. It's very easy. And once we do unlock it, we find the Book of Apologies locked behind some kind of like cage with like a key in it. And Dr. Hurst from outside the door tells us that, oh, she might have some tools in her office or something to be able to get it open, so we can follow her to go get those and then come back. We start to like follow her, but she kind of just disappears. Mm-hmm. Like we never really see her, but like Nancy starts calling to her like she's disappeared. And we're like trying to follow her, but then she just like is not there anymore. It's supposed to be, I think, kind of spooky. Like we're trying to get like the action like ramped up and make it like intense, but it's not just effective.
Chaotic.
Yeah. I kept feeling like I had done something wrong. Like when I was playing it, like I'm supposed to actually go somewhere else or do something faster, but it's not the case. It's just.
They just write this in like Dr. Hurst just immediately sprints away from the scene. And she's like, wait up. I don't know where you went. Where are you? And Dr. Hurst meanwhile, is like, over here. And then the phone rings and Nancy takes it for some reason.
Yes. She's like Usain bolting it away from us. Yeah. And we are like trying to frantically keep up. Why is this woman racing to get her tools in the first place? I don't know.
And why can't Nancy just stay here? If she's got to run so quickly, surely she'll just run back really quickly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why we have to follow her at all. It's bananas. Anyway. Okay. So yes, we get a call and we answer it, even though we're frantically trying to race after this woman. We answer it. And it's Deirdre. She's asking for our help, and we just hang up on her because that's a Nancy Drew thing to do. And then we turn back around into the room, and we see someone in a black hoodie holding the Book of Apologies. Like, they've just managed to make it into this room, which is, like, literally right behind our backs. Like, we haven't made it that far away from this room. We turn right back around. Somebody is in there holding this book that was just locked up. Somehow they've managed to retrieve it. And they set off like this smoke bomb on the ground that like sets off all this smoke. And then once it like clears, we like see that they've like fled out the window and are running off into the Austrian wilderness, I guess. And so then we as Nancy have to like chase them for a while, and then once we finally make it to like confront them, they set off another smoke bomb and then they just disappear. It's interesting.
This is great. It's not.
They have left behind some clues though. They left behind this key that has like an AW on it, and that's kind of the shape of what the lock was on the cage on the outside of the Book of Apologies. So that's probably how they opened it. And we see a partially torn airplane ticket from Vienna to Boston, but the name is ripped off, unfortunately. This is the biggest malarkey that I have ever seen, because if Nancy was any kind of real detective and she had any kind of real contacts, all it would take is one call to an airline to solve this mystery. Because she sees the seat number. It's not like she has to get an entire list of the, you know, the flight manifest or whatever. Right. She could have and just cross-referenced it with whoever her suspects are in Salem a little later. And not that challenging. But
Why would we do that?
Why would we make this easier on ourselves?
Right.
Anyway, But so that's what we find. Then our phone rings again. It's Deirdre again. She's like, don't hang up on me. And she tells us that she is in Salem, Massachusetts. And her cousin who lives in Salem is in some kind of trouble, some kind of complicated situation. And Deirdre wants us to come there to use our detective skills somehow to help her. She still doesn't tell us exactly what or why, but luckily, you know, the plane ticket that we found said Boston to, you know, Austria. So clearly our culprit here is from Boston, and that's very close to Salem, Massachusetts. And so we're like, you know what? Sure. Since we're on our way to Massachusetts anyway, I guess we can stop by Salem, Deirdre. See you rubbing your face in frustration already. Do you want to take it?
Sure. So we cut to about a 17-hour long dialogue scene because they're all like that. No, I'm just kidding. There is a lot of dialogue in this game, though. Yeah. Like, I feel like a lot of it is just watching mostly conversations talking. Take place. Yeah. And to be fair, there are a lot of conversations in the Nancy Drew games. Like, you have to interrogate all the suspects, get all the alibis. We're used to that. We know that's going to happen. But at least, you know, you get to like choose dialogue option. This is just like a cutscene that you're just watching like a movie. You're just sitting there watching it. Anyway, so we're in the car with Deirdre and we drive past a partially burned down house. And she says that that is the reason that we're here. So we learn that she has two cousins, Tegan and May Perry, who had a pretty difficult childhood. And now May is under suspicion of having burned down that house. We learn that this is a historic mansion in Salem, the Hawthorne House. Or is it Hawthorne?
It's Hawthorne. Sorry. Yeah. They do that on purpose. It's so dumb. Okay. So they do that because they can't, I guess, for some reason, say Hawthorne, like H-A-W-T-H-O-R-E-N-E, however that's spelled. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even though they literally mention Nathaniel Hawthorne. So why can't you just say Hawthorne? Like, I guess this is a real historical thing. I don't know. But it's just, it's like, clearly the house, this burned down, you know, thing is supposed to be the House of the Seven Gables in Salem. Like, that's what it's clear to me that it is, okay, like, based off of. Mm-hmm. I've been to the House of the Seven Gables. I've seen it. It's the same. And so I, you know, it's just wild to me that, like, they have to, like, make these differentiations. Because it feels like an obfuscation. Like, if you're trying to, why would you not want to try to educate people on, like, the reality of, like, these places? And, like, if you were going to make it about, I talk about this a little bit later. Maybe I should just talk about it at the end. But, like, if you're trying to, like, make it about a real place, like, use the actual real details.
Right.
So that we can learn them. Anyway. So that's irritating to me. But yes, Hawthorne, not so Hawthorne.
They do explain that, yeah, he changed his name and everything. Maybe it's just that now it's been Hawthorne for so long, we just call it Hawthorne now. Sorry, I just confused myself with which it is currently. But no, that's a good point, though, because they, I don't know if you remember, but they were originally going to call Tegan and May their last name Paris instead of Perry. Like, the original announcement from Midnight in Salem when they released the character art for that was going to be it. And then they changed it for some reason. I think Olivia was going to have a different last name as well that made her one of the families or whatever. But, yeah, spoiler alert, we'll learn later on that the Perry last name was changed to distance their family from somebody that was involved in the Salem witch trials. But I don't know. It's very weird to me.
Yeah.
They did. That's another complaint that I have a lot of times. I'll see people compliment this game and say, wow, it looks so much like actual Salem.
It does not.
I've never been to Salem yet. We're about to. By the time this episode releases, we'll have just been to Salem. You've been. Mm-hmm. In 2019, before this game released, I am a crazy person who spent a lot of time on Google Maps walking around the streets of Salem to see what it looks like. There is no town square that looks like that. There's a statue that kind of looks like the statue that they have in the game, but it's not where they say it is in the game. Like, there's no museum that looks like that. It doesn't look like that, which is fine. It doesn't need to. There's plenty of games that are set in real locations that don't look anything like that actual place. There's also games that are set in real locations that do look like exactly that place. Like, Danger by Design looks a lot like the actual places in Paris that they send us to. But Sorry, what were you going
to
say?
That's my big critique. That's what I was kind of alluding to, is the fact that, like, yeah, they set this place in Salem. This is legitimate Salem. And it's about, like, a real, like, serious, like, historical topic, like the Salem witch trials. And it's not anything like Salem. Like, I'm sorry. They try to frame it as, like, this small town. And so, like, there's all, like, this small town, like, hysteria kind of going on, which I understand how that kind of mirrors and echoes, like, the original Salem witch trials. And so that's why they did that. That's why they chose to do that. But you cannot pretend to me, try to make me believe that Salem is, like, a small town vibe.
I looked it up. It's 45,000 people. And it's, not only that, it's part of the Boston Metroplex. Like, it's basically a suburb.
It is so, it is not a small town at all.
No.
It's, and it, the amount of, like, tourism heavy that Salem is, mm-hmm. it makes it feel so much larger than it actually is, because there's so many different people there all the time. Right. You know, on Main Street, shopping, you know, doing all of this stuff. It's also right off the coast of Massachusetts. So it's like, that's like so touristy.
It's packed. It's the city is packed.
It's packed. Yeah. It's so populated. And so, like, just like the way that they try to frame it as, like, being this small town, and, like, that they all are, like, know each other and have a history. It's, like, insane. It's actually insane, and it takes me so much out of it, because it's like, if you're trying to set this in a real place, talk about real events and real people that existed and that died, like, you can't make this fictional. You can't introduce the you cannot make the setting a fictional thing. Right. If it's a real place, like, just make it a fake town somewhere else in Massachusetts. Like, just name it something else. And maybe you can say that all the people from Salem moved here. Whatever. Like, you know, but don't, you can't make it Salem, Massachusetts. You just can't.
And I feel like they, a lot of this relies on the, whoever's playing the game to already have knowledge of the Salem witch trials. Mm-hmm. Like, they promise that it's going to be educational. And there's a witch museum in Salem, but you don't get to, like, look around the museum. No. You just go into, like, this entry place where they have a lady wearing a pilgrim costume.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a list of the people that died. But that's, that doesn't tell me anything about what happened.
No.
I didn't know who Tituba was before I played this game. I'm sorry. I had no idea who she was. I had never heard that name before. I didn't know very much about the witch trials. I really didn't.
And imagine if you're a kid playing this, too. And, like, you never, you're not going to know that. You're not going to understand all the history. You're not going to have read, what's it, the very famous play that we all had to read in school about the Salem witch trials. What is that called?
The Crucible. The Crucible.
I'd never read that.
You never read The Crucible?
No.
Okay.
I didn't even know that was about the Salem witch trials.
It's a very, like, common core, like, a lot of children in high school are required to read The Crucible.
Turns out knowing who Tituba is pretty important for this game, actually.
Yeah, like, it's like a big part of, the Salem witch trials. And so, imagine if you're a little child playing this, you don't know all of this historical context. You've never heard about this before. You're just thrown in there. You don't get to learn about it. Think about the Secret of the Scarlet Hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like Mayan culture is commonly taught in schools, but imagine, like, going into that not knowing anything and coming out of it all the things that you learn about the Mayans.
You
and
learn
that was
a lot.
Game number five six. So, like, how can we have come so from those early days to now? I can understand. I'm going off the rails here. I can understand how, you know, we want to change the game. We want to make it a different thing. But since when, and who has not enjoyed the educational aspects of these games? Who? What one person has criticized that?
Right.
Or being like, oh, you know, I really wish that they didn't make it, like, real. Like, I want just, like, a fiction. No, Every single person that I have ever spoken to or any fan online that I have ever seen, it's like, oh, I love their attention to detail. I love how realistic it is in this regard. I love how much I learned about this, or, you know, that I could go back and actually do more research about this and realize it was a real thing and all that. Like, so to just like essentially take like a real historical event and then write like fan fiction about it, which is what it feels like, it doesn't feel like you're actually teaching me anything. I'm not learning anything. I came out of this with more questions than I have answers about a topic, which is crazy to me because as someone who is interested in the concept of like the Salem witch trials, to have to play a game and then not learn about it, where it's about it.
I really wanted to learn about it too. Like I said, I didn't know very much about it beforehand. I was very interested though, and maybe in retrospect, this was a bad idea, but I intentionally tried not to let go out of my way to learn more things about it beforehand because I wanted to like play experience this game blank slate. Exactly. And like see, all right, how do they present this information? What are we learning here? And just kind of walk away with just the information that they present. And I didn't feel like I learned anything. In fact, like you said, I was just more confused afterwards. Like, who was that? And why did we wait until the exposition at the very end reveal of the mystery to mention this historic figure who was a real person?
We don't learn how the Salem witch trials started. We don't learn anything about the history of the witch trials in Europe. I mean, I guess we learn that they happened in Austria at this one castle, but that's it. We don't learn anything about that. We don't learn about the course of this, anything about the Salem witch trials. We don't learn, you know, how people died throughout. We don't know the process of what a witch trial actually looked like. Right. We don't know what these judges actually did, how they convicted anyone, how they actually
tested. It was just implied that it was some legal process. Right.
Yeah, we don't know how they, like, we never learned about any of, like, literally we didn't learn what a witch trial is. We didn't learn about holding hot rods or, like, seeing if someone would sink when in the water, when they're like attached to us. We didn't learn about the torture. We didn't learn about the starvation. We didn't learn about the imprisonment. We didn't learn okay. You know what we did learn? We learned about the property theft.
Okay. That's something, but it's
that's
like,
something.
That's just feels more like a footnote than educational.
Right. And we don't learn. So we don't learn, you know, the course of those trials. We don't learn how the people died. We don't learn about the resolution or even what happened to any of those people or their families or anything afterwards. We don't learn about the like historical context and how much it's affected like Salem itself. We don't learn that.
We do pretend that it's like actively a current issue though. Yes. Like, we'll get to it later, but when like the Perry house gets vandalized. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't think that that's the real attitude that people today would have, but we act like we're still in the Salem witch trials somehow. They were like picking sides and the town is turning against families and what?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm. So it's like we get all of like the like social, like hot, like politicky, like commentary-ish on like small town vibes and like, you know, being caught up in something. We get all of that, but we don't actually learn any of like the facts about it or about like the effects of that kind of thing. Except for, I guess, like how it affects May specifically. But
which is not a good, it's not a good analog to what they're trying to do here.
Right. And so it's so disappointing. What were we even talking about? Oh, God.
We just started the summary. Well, okay. So this Hawthorne house in Salem has recently burned down. And because May Perry, Deirdre's cousin, has this like troublemaker reputation in town, supposedly they're looking at her as being the culprit for this, and she is refusing to give an alibi. Great. Also, the house is supposedly haunted by, I guess, the ghosts of the witch trial? Question mark. So, essentially, Deirdre is asking us to come and see if we can't, one, like, you know, just get an alibi out of May, two, like, see if we can't figure out, like, who actually burned this house down. All right, so we finally get to the Perry home, and we meet Tegan and May. Tegan alludes to something significant happening in the past that causes May to, like, you know, have this untrusting personality, just kind of be standoffish all the time. But we don't, again, everything is just so disjointed in this game. We don't really get anything specific just yet. Tegan also tells us that we should stop by the museum that she works at later, but warns us not to get suckered into Olivia Ravencroft's walking tour. We learn that Olivia Ravencroft presents herself as a witch in town and is, like, giving these witch trial tours of Salem. But Tegan tells us she's not a real witch. It's okay. Just, like, you know, the charlatan act that she puts on.
Listen. I'm sorry to we're going to have to pause again because holy crap. So, okay. I got so fired up about this when she's like, she's not a quote unquote real witch. So if you've ever been to Salem, that place is littered with real witches, real witches. And when I say real witches, I mean people who practice paganism or witchcraft or all of these different very real religions or practices, right? Like, and so they're real witches because they do that. They're not, the fact that this game plays off like witchcraft and, like, you know, whatever, as being like this supernatural kind of, like, thing is, like, and that they, like, turn, they, like, thumb their noses at it.
Uh-huh.
It's, like, literally this game is supposed to be set in Salem. And imagine saying that to a resident of Salem. Yeah. Is, like, you'd be kicked out of town. Like, by, like, saying somebody's not a real witch because of what reason? Because you've never seen them do a spell and you've never seen them do magic. So they're not a real witch.
Olivia didn't pass the spirituality vibes test that Tegan set up for her.
It's insane to me. Anyway, sorry.
And that's, like, the only, like, touching that we do on the tourism aspect in town. Of, like, Olivia's catering to the tourists. How dare she?
Or, like the fact that, like, yeah, because she dresses up like a flamboyant witch means she's not a real witch.
Ooh, she wears long purple dresses. What a charlatan. What a faker.
What a faker. What a fake witch. She likes purple dresses. She likes to dress up.
She likes to twirl around in
like
her dresses.
A witch.
Yeah.
And so she's not a real witch because she dresses like she is one. Oh.
So there's some animosity there between Tegan and Olivia, we can
there's
tell.
There's some animosity between me and Tegan.
Tegan's the worst. Tegan's the worst. We'll learn why later.
Yes.
She does some worse things. But so we get that little dig at Olivia. And then we also, we talk to her a little bit more. And then she gets even, like, more, like, weird about what she'll reveal to us. But basically we learn that May had some sort of accident in a fire a long time ago, unrelated to this, but now we can kind of understand why fires would be a touchy subject for May. All right. We try to talk to May, but she, again, is very standoffish. She doesn't want anything to do with us. So Deirdre tells us that previously she tried to visit Judge Danforth's office. Supposedly he is the one dealing with this case because, you know, police and judges are the same thing.
Seriously.
He's investigating the case or something. So we decide to go into town to try to get more information about the judge. So we go outside to go out to the car and we get a call from Ned. Then this is crazy because he's definitely cheating on us, like 1,000%. He's like, oh, Nancy, you work too much. You just left your vacation to go to Boston to work on a mystery. Are you crazy? You're overworking yourself, blah, blah, blah. And then we hear, oh, Ned, get off the phone.
Sorry, that was more like a witch cackle than like a girly, flirty giggle.
Not a real witch, though. Not allowed in Salem. No, so essentially there's just this other female voice in the room.
Wait, okay, I'm sorry, side note. So Ned is also on vacation.
Yeah.
Somewhere else, and while we were on vacation in Austria.
No, he does mention later that his fall break just ended. So I guess he's like,
okay, so at he the just very went tail on end. Vacation.
Yeah, he's like just gotten back or something.
It's just wild to me that like Nancy was on vacation. Then she comes to Salem to quote unquote work, even though we know that really like she's not doing this for money. So anyway, so she comes back to Salem for quote unquote work. And then Ned is on vacation and he calls Nancy. He's like, you work too much. She was just on vacation. Like.
And then is mad that she's not on vacation with him. Well, why didn't y'all plan to go on vacation together?
Seriously, if Nancy goes on vacation and then Ned's fall break is in like the next week and he wants to go on a vacation, it's like, what is the disconnect? It's like planes passing in the night. Like, yeah. Like it's a real effed up, this relationship. Yeah.
So this is really weird. It's Kalina Herman's voice, if y'all are not aware. That's who plays the girl. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Well, that's,
they do a great giggle.
Yeah.
Because I can't do that.
But that's just the gist of the call. Like, we're just in the middle of telling Ned what we're doing. He tells us that we're working too much. And then this woman's voice comes on the phone and tells Ned to hang up and then giggles and then... He, like, doesn't even come back on the phone at all. Nancy's just like, well, I guess enjoy your vacation, Ned. And then we hang up. Yeah. And that's really weird. And then if we try to call him back, we just get his voicemail for, like, the next 2 days. I don't think we talk to him again until the third day.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So then we get to the town square finally, and we see that Olivia Ravencroft is like on this podium in the middle of the town square giving a demonstration about her self-guided walking tours. We get to hear a little bit of her spiel. She says that allegedly a coven of witches settled in Salem in like the past few years, and they are determined to seek vengeance for the lives of the Salem witches that were lost during the witch trials. And now the ghosts of the witches from the witch trials haunt the town. And then she uses a smoke bomb. Kind of similar to the one we saw in Austria, actually. But I don't think she actually disappears, does she?
No.
She just like sets off the smoke bomb. It's just like
a spooky effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then we can start talking to her. She won't tell us about the smoke bomb. But she does tell us that she was out of town the night of the fire at the Hathorne house. She doesn't believe that May set it on fire. She thinks that the ghosts did it. Why not?
Yeah.
We do have a lot. This is a very different change from the previous 32 games. We have NPCs in this game. Mm-hmm. Like, we've always had NPCs that are like our suspects. We usually have like between 3 to 5 suspects per game that we can go and interrogate them, and they always play into part of the mystery. We have other people, though, that are just like randos in the town. We can't really talk to them. If you click on them, they'll like make a comment about mm-hmm. Salem or something, but otherwise they're just kind of there. And so there's a bunch of these like protesters outside of the town hall / courthouse, I guess. But they're out there protesting, and we can't ask them what they're protesting about.
No.
So we go inside and we knock on Judge Danforth's office door, but he's locked inside his own office and I guess doesn't know how to unlock it from inside.
Who designed a courthouse where offices can be locked from the outside and you can't get out?
That's scary.
Yeah.
So he tells us that a woman named Alicia Cole has the spare key and she's down the hall. So we go down the hall and we ask her, and she says, yeah, he did give me a spare key, but I gave it back to him. But here's a paperclip. Cool. Thanks. But we talked to her a little bit. We learned that she is a lawyer. Actually, she knows Carson. Mm-hmm. And she offers her help if we ever need it on the case. Very nice of her. So we use our paperclip and we go and we pick the lock on Judge Danforth's door. Lock picking puzzle. You said you like this one.
I do. I actually like this one. And I mean, I will say, so one of my big critiques of this game is that the puzzles are not actually puzzles. Like, they're not challenging.
There's not a lot of good puzzles on this one.
There's no good puzzles. The lock picking puzzle was straightforward in what you had to do. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think, probably the most challenging puzzle in the game. So moderately challenging. And I actually like enjoyed it. It was quick.
That's good.
But like, I liked the mechanic of it. And I feel like if we had to do that, I wish we had to do that multiple times in the game. I wish it wasn't just a wish that they do it at the first time, give you the instructions, and then the next time you have to do it, they don't give you the instructions, you know?
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
I don't even remember doing this one the first time I played it. The only puzzle that I remember actually liking from this was the Wheel of the Year, kind of at the end, when Deirdre's locked in that room, and it's, like, burning on the floor.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they unlock the door. Deirdre's really impressed with us, and we have some banter with Deirdre about how we have this lock picking skill.
Mm-hmm.
But we get inside the office finally, and we get to talk to the judge, and he is really upset about these protesters outside. He tells us a little bit more about the Hawthorne House situation. We learn that it was built in the 1600s by Judge Hawthorne, or Hawthorne, whatever his name was, one of the three main judges for the witch trials here in Salem. More recently, a woman named Frances Tuttle, who was a like way long descendant of this judge, she lived in a portion of the house because it's pretty big. She just lived in like this one portion of the house that was still, I guess, safe, because the other the rest of the house was kind of like really in disrepair and it was kind of falling down. And she lived there alone, except she had like a part-time caregiver named Lauren Holt. A few months ago, Frances passed away from apparently natural causes, and now that she does not have a legal heir, according to Salem law, the house reverts to public property, and there is a deadline for 2 days from now at midnight where the property will fall into... it's Salem property right now, but if they don't decide what to do with it in the next 2 days or whatever, it goes over to the state. Is that right?
I think essentially there's like a waiting period. There's like a 2 week or month, I don't remember how long, waiting period to see if they can determine a legal heir.
And then it goes to Salem, right?
Right.
They get to do whatever they want with it, whether that be but demolish it's specifically, it or turn it into a...
It's specifically because it's like a historic property. Like it wouldn't be like that if it was just like a, you know, some normal house or whatever. It's because it's like a historic landmark or something. And so because there is no legal heir, it becomes the property of Salem if no legal heir can be discovered within a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I don't know why I thought the state was going to get, maybe I confused like Salem and the state owning it, because that's basically the same thing. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Lauren Holt, the part-time caregiver woman, she actually still lives on the property, but in this like outbuilding almost, there's like a small, almost guest house type of building that's next to the big house. And she actually owns a tea shop that's on the square called Luminous Infusions. We learn a little bit more about the actual fire. There was a paint solvent residue, which is an accelerant, on burnt embers in the house, so they think that this was intentional. It was arson. He's also convinced that May is responsible because in a city of 45,000 people, she's the only one that's ever seen a fire, I guess.
He says history of fire-related crime.
Right.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Which we don't even know what it is yet.
But later we find out. And she was in an accident, the fire, and she got burned.
Yeah. And she was like 8?
She was a literal child.
She was she was less than 12 or something.
Yes.
I don't remember the exact age.
I think she was 8 or 9. Yeah, that sounds right.
When you're too young to be held accountable for such type of a crime.
And so basically he's saying that like she was responsible for that, even though we didn't convict her. And so he's essentially trying to convict her for this crime, even though he really wanted to convict her for the past crime.
I know it's been 10 years, but that girl's got the fire bug. I can tell. Okay. So there's no evidence that it was her either. He's just decided that it was her because she's had this history.
Also, like, that's definitely how it works. Like, when there's a crime, a judge gets to decide who the main suspect is and investigate and not the police.
There's no ever mention of a police. There's no talking to a detective. There's no, like, arrests made.
We literally had a game about arson. Like, we had the
we've
whole...
We've done this, yeah.
We've done this. We've done an arson investigation. In fact, Nancy was arrested for the arson investigation, and we had to prove that we didn't do it, which is not how it's supposed to work, by the way. But that's what we did. We you know, analyzed accelerants. We collected alibis. We found evidence. And this is all we get. In this, we get the mention of a possible accelerant and just our main suspect. And that's it.
So clearly it was May, right? Also, apparently the judge wanted the Book of Apologies because he's under pressure from this group called the Accused Witches in town.
We don't learn about who they are, what that's about, why he would need the Book of Apologies for this group of accused, which I was so confused. I thought maybe we were supposed to do something else before I did this bit, and so maybe I would have gotten that information, but I don't think so. Yeah. So, anyway.
So we start to leave, but then he says that he needs our help. Apparently someone recently broke into the evidence room, which, again, this is not a police station. And they have not called the police to come investigate this because nothing was taken. So he needs Nancy to investigate, and Nancy's like, well, why wouldn't you call the police? And he's like, oh, never mind, I'll call the police. Okay, great. So then just across the way is the Salem Historical Museum, where, again, we don't learn any Salem history. But we can talk to Tegan because, again, she works there at the front desk. So we talk to her a little bit, and we are able to get tickets for Olivia's walking tour later, because obviously we're going to go on that, right?
But also, she is the one who is responsible for selling them because, yeah. Like, Olivia's little store is, like, attached. It's, like, the gift shop, essentially, for this museum. Uh-huh. So she didn't mention that she and Olivia work together, basically. Yeah. And if presumably that Olivia is running this walking tour and selling tickets, like, you can buy tickets for it at the museum's counter, then the proceeds of this walking tour go to the museum.
It sounds right? like it to me. If she works at the museum gift shop and is running the walking tour, it sounds like it's like an official thing set up through this museum.
And Tegan was like, don't let her sucker you into this walking tour. Girl, this benefits your museum.
This is so weird.
It doesn't make sense. Make it make sense. I know they're supposed to have this animosity, but she shouldn't be like, don't go on the tour.
Yeah.
She should make like a disparaging remark about the tour, maybe being like, it's for tourists, you know, it's not really the history.
A tour you want for the history, tourists?
Look
really?
At my exhibit, you know,
mm-hmm.
except we don't get that.
Like, we can't look at the exhibit. Because when you come to a museum, you want to not look at the exhibit, not look at the, like, mannequins that they have on display with the old-timey clothing and stuff. What we're really there for is the pumpkin carving.
We can't carve pumpkins, though. Yeah.
And then if you take a pumpkin and put it everywhere in town, you get an award at the end, I think.
Yes. Yeah, you get an achievement. I absolutely did that. That is good. Yeah, that is like literally the only reason I came to the museum. It's like, oh, I gotta make another pumpkin, so I go put it on a candle.
Might as well. It's kind of cute. They have like different faces and different eye shapes and everything you can cut out, and it's cute. Yeah. But it's a nice touch for sure. There's no point to it. It's just it's cute. So that's fine. At this point, once we get the tickets for the actual walking tour, we can go get this like tablet device from Olivia, and it's a self-guided tour, so you just like go down the list of everything that she's got on this tablet for you. So we take the tablet to different like marked locations on the map around Salem and listen to like a little audio clip from Olivia telling us about it. The only interesting part, unfortunately, is about the cemetery. The cemetery is just directly next to the museum, so we can walk into there. And in the center of the cemetery is this large statue of a woman, this Abigail Hawthorne Woodley person who was the wife of the judge and who worked to try to help free the accused. Can't really do anything else here. There's a path through the cemetery, or like from the cemetery next to it, there's the woods, and then through the woods you would have to take this path to get to the Hawthorne house, but Nancy won't let us go down there yet. We have to finish the tour before we can progress in the game, and then once we do, Deirdre will ask to go back to the Perry house at this point.
So once we get back to the Perry house, we can talk to May again. And this time, if we kind of say the right things to her, she'll talk a little bit more to us. And she does say that the reason why she can't give an alibi for the Hawthorne House fire is because it doesn't just involve her. So essentially, she's protecting someone. She doesn't want to out someone with her alibi, which is interesting.
Mm.
She also gives us a little tidbit into Tegan's past, and she tells us that Tegan actually used to be friends with both Lauren and Olivia, but they had a falling out a while ago. So there's bad blood. She also tells us that the judge is against her specifically because she used to be friends with his son, and he didn't like her because he thought she was like a bad influence on his son, even though his son is just a general skis bag, which we'll learn a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But it's funny. Afterwards, after we talk to May, we tell Deirdre that we are going to go to the Hathorn house because it's time, right? The sun has gone down in the sky. It's nighttime. It's officially time for us to be spooked. So we're going. And Deirdre is like, I'm not going with you. You be careful, though, because too many people think that there is something in that house for it not to be true.
Ooh.
This is a good point from Deirdre, and I love it a lot. And it's like, honestly, the only spooky bit of the game for me is when Deirdre says this, because it's like a little bit of a buildup. And she's like, listen, Nancy, I know that like you're all Miss, you know, logic or whatever, but a lot of people say they've seen something there. So you should be careful.
I love Deirdre so much. She's so sassy. Like, I wish we could really encapsulate how just how great her personality is in this summary, because she's so quippy and just everything she says is amazing.
Yeah. So we go back to the cemetery, and we have to walk through the cemetery and then through that path in the woods at night. Starts to drizzle, starts to rain a little bit. Which should be really spooky. And this scene is supposed to be really spooky. And it would be really spooky if the animation had any reality to it at all. Unfortunately, it just looks goofy. But what happens is we get this cutscene, right, where we're walking through the woods. And then we start to see, like, this floating ghost of a Puritan woman just like throughout, kind of like in the corner of our eye everywhere, even at one point hanging from a branch on a tree, which is dark.
I think that that's where the actual witch trials took place, right? Because the place that they think that they took place for a long time, they figured out that that wasn't really the spot, that it was actually like somewhere in the woods, like back behind where it actually took place or something like that.
Wow.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. I have tried to learn about the witch trials since playing this game for the first time. And apparently the location where they initially thought it took place was not the real spot.
Right. So that makes that even darker than I thought. Right. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yikes. Great. Then as we're seeing all this, we're startled by a scarecrow. It's just like, I guess we're just like looking everywhere and we walk right up to it or whatever. And then we get a call from Frank Hardy.
Yay!
Joe's there too, but I don't care. They've called us because they happen to know that we're in Salem because they saw a news article where Tegan mentioned that she hired us. Tegan didn't give us a heads up about that. But okay, interesting. And they mention Ned. They're like, how's Ned? And we kind of bring up that, like, oh, things have been, like, distant and awkward between us, to which Frank gets super excited about.
He's like, really? Oh, I mean, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's so bad. I'm so sorry to hear that. But we are like, oh, yeah, so where are you guys now? And they're like, oh, actually, we're in Boston.
Perfect.
Nancy's like, great. Well, why don't you guys come up to Salem and you can, you know, we can catch up or whatever. And at first Joe's like, no, you know, we're not going to be able to make it. We got to go do this thing or whatever. But Frank is like, oh, no, we'll definitely.
We'll be there.
We'll be there. We'll be there.
And also, if you want to run away together, Nancy, we can do that afterwards. Like,
But so after that call, we continue walking through the woods. We finally make it to the Hathorn house, and then we see like a bright light in the upstairs window, like shine out. Also, I noticed the house is like the burnt side of it. It's like half of it is still intact and half of it has been burned down by the fire. It's like still smoking. Is that normal? Weird. Is that?
I don't think so.
Okay. I mean, like, I know houses can smoke for days after a fire, but, like, it's been more than that, right?
Yeah.
It's been at least a couple weeks, right?
I think so. I don't know. Did well, they because say the timeline?
Well, the timeline of the like, the will situation for the house, is it's at least 2 weeks. And
oh,
we're
right,
coming up on, like, a two-day deadline. So it's been over a week. That seems...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, well.
Anyway, so we start approaching the door to Hawthorne House, and then we're kind of jump scared by Lauren Holt, who shows up. She tells us, hey, you're trespassing. Get the heck out of here, right? But we're able to talk to her a little bit. We could also, like, kind of lie to her. There are some, like, choices in our conversations with people sometimes where we can kind of, like, manipulate people to try to talk to us, and Lauren is one of those people. And eventually, if you unsuccessfully lie to her, you can, like, she'll catch you out on it, and you have to, like, apologize to her, which is interesting. So we're able to talk to her a little bit more. She does invite us into her cottage to, like, talk. And we learn that that Frances Tuttle, the woman who she was quote unquote a caretaker for, actually is, like, her adopted mom, essentially. Like, they were incredibly close. And that Frances supposedly wrote a will for the Hawthorne House, but she can't find it. But she knows it exists because she told her that if something ever happened to her, that she would write Lauren, that she had written Lauren into a will so that Lauren would inherit the house. So, of course, Lauren is, like, frantically trying to find this will in this two-day deadline. And she's also hired Alicia Cole, the lawyer, to try to help her with all this legal stuff. Then we're leaving Lauren's cottage. We see that Puritan ghost lady again, but this time it's, like, directly in front of us, and it's almost like beckoning us toward the house. And so if we follow her, like, click towards the ghost, we hear this voice that says, that the subtitles say is Abigail. So it's a bit of a let down there. So we know this ghost is supposed to be Abigail Hawthorne Woodley, which is too soon. We need to just have the subtitles, not give those kinds of spoilers. But anyway, the voice says, curse not the darkness, which, interesting.
I don't think anyone was cursing the darkness, but
no.
Thanks.
And Nancy is, like, freaking out. Like, she is, like, scared. Like, things, she's, like, kind of, like, looking all over the place. Like, things are clearly very hectic at that moment for her. The ghost, like, zooms in, like, at our face, like, rushes towards us. And then Nancy blacks out, I think. Kind of.
That sounds about right for Nancy Drew. That's exactly what she'd do in an exciting situation like this.
Just lose consciousness.
Of course, yeah.
But then I guess we wake back up or something and we make it back to the Perry House, but maybe we didn't actually black out. Maybe we just left and that's when the scene ended and we just show up back at the Perry House. I don't know. It's kind of unclear. Do you want to take it?
Sure. So we get back to the Perry House. We tell Deirdre what we just saw, and she assumes that we're joking. She's like, be real, Drew. You don't believe in ghosts. And then we talk to her a little bit more, and she's like, oh my gosh, you're being serious. There's no way, right? But then Deirdre's also a little bit shooken up. And so we tell her that she has to come back with us the next night so that she can see it as well. But then we go to bed. We get this terrifying cutscene.
This is horrifying.
When we wake up, we are just in the guest bedroom at the Perry House where we're sleeping, and we're in the bed. We're looking up at the ceiling when we wake up, and there's blood dripping down onto our face.
Onto Nancy's face!
Yeah. Yeah. Just the ceiling is bleeding onto Nancy. Horrifying.
Why? Also, why? What does that have to do with anything? Literally anything.
But then we wake up for real. And Deirdre's like, hey, get out of bed. I have a surprise for you downstairs. Come on. And what an amazing surprise it is, because we go downstairs and Frank and Joe are in the kitchen. Yay! They are in the process of burning the house down, trying to make pancakes. Not pancakes, Johnny cakes, excuse me. We have to play like a little mini game where we have to make the pancakes for them because they can't figure it out. And we have to like guess the ingredients. It's extremely simple, like deceptively simple, because they make it seem like you're going to have to do math and then you don't. But then we sit down to eat our breakfast and Joe and Frank start telling Nancy that they are starting their very own detective agency and they want Nancy to consider coming and joining them as a partner. Amazing. But before Nancy can answer, Deirdre interrupts and is like, we're here to solve the mystery for May. Come on, let's focus, guys. So Joe tells us that he has been working on some ghost hunting equipment. He's been building this and he wants us to try it out. And they're going to investigate later in the cemetery using the ghost equipment. And then Deirdre tells us that she is going to go to the town archives to look at the history of the ownership of the Hathorn House. Nancy finally explains that Judge Danforth is working on a case of dispossession brought forth from the accused witches group. So the Hawthorne House land was stolen from their ancestors that had died in the witch trials, had been stolen from them, and then the judge used it to build his dream home on or whatever. And then that's why we were sent to retrieve the Book of Apologies, because it has the only record of their ancestors. All right.
Seems unlikely. That's all I have to say. There should be like censuses and, you know, marriage and birth and death records and all that stuff. But
I would hope so. But
no.
So because the arson happened around the same time as this burglary that occurred at the courthouse / town hall, we're still not super clear on what exactly this building is. Nancy tells us that she wants to investigate both of these crimes. So after breakfast, we go to talk to May again. She tells us a little bit about her previous accident. You did put it in the notes here. She was 9 years old. She was in a shed playing with candles, as 9-year-olds do, and it burned down. And this is why people suspect her of arson. They make Holy a lot of shit. References. Yeah, this is crazy.
That's cold, man.
It's horrible of these people. Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, like a tragic accident, and like thank God she survived. Yeah. Like people are like hating on her, and now she's developed like this entire like troublemaker, like, you know, reputation or something, because she got into an accident with fire when she was a child.
When she was a child at an age to not like have the wherewithal to know right from wrong. I mean, she, you know, is going to have a sense of right from wrong, but she's not going to realize that this is going to lead to this, or that
like that sense of right and wrong is not going to stop her from being fire pretty. Like,
right.
You know, so. Yeah. Even if my sense of right and wrong doesn't always stop me from being fire pretty, you know, yeah. Like,
and not it's not like she was doing this on purpose.
I'm going to burn something down. But even she's if a child. She was,
yeah. Even if she had set this thing on fire, it's not like she knows, like, oh, this is arson and I want to do arson. Like, laws are written. I'm sorry. Anyway, I won't. She's too young to have been convicted of this, because she's too young to have known that that's like a crime that she could have committed, if she had even been intending to commit a crime. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people suspect her of arson. They also, in the dialogue in the game, they make a lot of references to May's physical appearance. I don't think that they did a great job with animating her character model to make it look that way, because it's not overly obvious when you see her that she looks different.
Yeah,
it's
she's only got after scarring.
She has to point it out to us, and that's the only way I noticed. She's like, don't you see all these burns all over my arms? Well, her character's wearing a sweater, so we don't see her arms at all. So, like, it's just kind of weird how they say that.
I think it's supposed to be the entire side of her face, but she purposefully keeps the hair in front of her face, presumably, right, so that people don't see that. Mm-hmm.
Which I understand for her character design, absolutely, but you don't notice that because you just see her hair.
Yeah. But I think it wasn't just for the character design. I think, too, it was because they didn't want to have to show an animation that doesn't look good. Yeah. Like, that doesn't look realistic. Like, oh, like when you see it, you wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, that's a burn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a burn scar. You wouldn't.
It just looks like maybe she's got a birthmark on her nose. Yeah. And that's really all that you see because everything else is just her hair's in the way. So I don't know. It's weird. But so people suspect her of arson. And then now we can go out into town and try to like get alibis from people. So this takes another 85,000 hours to get everyone's alibis and figure out maybe if somebody potentially has a motive here. So first we go to talk to Lauren in her tea shop / modern day apothecary. And she says that before the fire, she was just in her shop. No customers, though. So nobody to verify this alibi. But then on the way home, she saw the fire and she was the one that called it in. She also tells us that she's seen that same ghost that we saw last night. She's seen that ghost at the Hawthorne Estate previously. We also have to mix some herbal remedies for her so that she'll talk to us. We use her family's ancestral book to get information about how to make these mixes. We learned that Tituba wrote this book, and Tituba was her ancestor.
My God.
Yeah, which if you're not familiar already, Tituba was like the first woman to die in the Salem witch trials. Isn't that right?
I believe so, yeah. And she's also one of the first like accusers, though, too. But it's
She?
It's kind of – let me just look it up because I don't want to say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So she was an enslaved woman also. That's important to note. But, yeah, she was one of the first accused, and she was actually owned by Samuel Parris.
That's right. Okay.
And yes, so she confessed to witchcraft and then she accused two other women. So because she was like one of the first accused, she was also like one of the first to like be like, oh, also it was these people. But it's because she was being tortured, you know, and like asked to do that. So that's why. But yeah.
She only had so much agency given her position. So
exactly.
That also contributes to the story. But
right.
So we learned that about her. Very interesting. And then we go talk to Tegan. She tells us that she was with her boyfriend at his apartment or his house or whatever, and they were watching a movie together. Her boyfriend's name is Damien, and she gives us his number so that we can call him and verify the story. She does say that Damien was only with her most of the night, but she trusts him. So not only can he alibi her, she can alibi him, except for part of the night, but they trust each other, so it's fine. That's weird.
It is weird.
She also lets us upstairs to a room in the museum that has more information on Salem, which is like the entrance is like behind this bookcase. And then upstairs we find this book that tells us about the AW symbol, how it was used as bootleggers to mark entrances to secret underground tunnels in Salem.
Okay.
That might be interesting later. And then we also find a note that Reverend Samuel Parris, who was another one of the people that was involved with all the accusations in the Salem witch trials, one of his descendants may have changed their last name to Perry. Okay, so this is May and Tegan Perry, obviously. And then we go talk to Olivia. She says that she was leading a ghost tour at the time of the arson. So maybe we can verify with her customers. We go talk to Alicia at the courthouse. She tells us that sometimes the judge leaves the doors to the courthouse unlocked. So trying to like nudge into our brain that maybe he was the one who left the evidence room unlocked and that's why it was able to get robbed. Okay. Alicia tells us that she was at a charity fundraiser the night of the arson and there were a lot of people there so anybody could can alibi her. And she also gives us a key to the Hawthorne house. Because Lauren, when we talked to her previously, she says, hey, Alicia has the key, so if you want to get it from her. So we ask her for it, and she does give it to us. So now that we have the key, let's go investigate. So when we get to the house, like you said, most of it is, like, sectioned off, and that section is burned, and then there's just a very small, livable place. We see, like, Frances Tuttle's bedroom. She's got some, like, medical equipment in there. Everything's very dusty. There's not really a lot that we can see. And then otherwise, it's just, like, this little foyer and then another room that Frances was clearly using, but it also got affected by the fire, so it's pretty charred. Really, the only thing in there that we can look at is this, like, wardrobe thing, and then across from the wardrobe is the mirror, and this is what we were talking about earlier, where you have to like position yourself just perfectly to see the reflection in the mirror, to like go and then like open up a panel in this like wardrobe desk secretary thing, what this massive piece of furniture, whatever it is, you open up this panel and it there's like a letter inside there from Francis to Lauren. It says the will is in the house.
How annoying.
So it's not the will. It's just a note telling us that the will is somewhere here.
Great.
Great. But like we've looked at everything that we can have access to. Like we can even go up the stairs in the Hawthorne house and then everything up there is completely burned. Like it's, there's nothing up there.
But like what a letdown.
Yeah.
That's such a letdown. The whole game is supposed to be about this spooky house. And then there's two rooms in it that we can explore. Mm-hmm. And only one of them actually has anything interesting to look at.
Yep. Oh, and I think we find a jacket in there.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. We find Olivia's jacket.
But, like, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't really give us anything. No. And I don't know. I didn't confirm this. But after going back and looking at it several times, I think that the, you know, the model for the house itself is the same model as the Perry house. Because the stairs are the exact same in both houses. Oh. And, like, the way Nancy walks up the stairs and the angle and everything. I think they just copy-pasted the model and then changed the appearance of the house. Because, like, the bedroom where Francis sleeps is, like, the doorway and everything where Nancy would turn. It's just the kitchen in the Perry house. Because that's that insane room on the other side of the staircase. And then same thing on the other side. Like, the layout of these houses is exactly the same. I think it's just copy-pasted over. Wow. Anyway, that's pretty much all that we can find in the house. So we go back to the main part of town, the main square, and we go back to the courthouse where we meet Judge Danforth's son, Jason. He's the worst. he's very, very conceited, kind of just a jerk. He's just a jerk guy. Judge Danforth still won't let us look at the evidence room when we go talk to him. So we have to call Carson and ask him to call the judge and give us permission, which takes all of 5 seconds. And then the judge is like, oh yeah, Carson said it's all good. So, he hands us a sticky note. He's like, here's the code to the room. So we go in there and we can open the door now. Inside the evidence room, there's one window in the room and it had bars over it, but the bars have been ripped off the wall. But Nancy makes a note. She says all the glass has been, like, there's no glass on the floor in here. So clearly the window is broken from the inside, because if somebody outside had smashed the window, the glass would have fallen in rather than out. So very interesting. We look around a little bit to investigate the break-in itself, but then we have to figure out what evidence was actually stolen during the break-in. Turns out all of it is related to the AW Group's claims. So we go back and talk to the judge about this, and he admits that he wanted us to get the book from Mosam Castle because he already knew that everything stolen from the courthouse was related to this case.
Okay. I'm sorry. So we're saying there was a break-in at the courthouse, and the judge originally tells us we didn't report it to the police because nothing was stolen. First of all, that's crazy enough already. The fact that you don't already have police that are just at the courthouse who would just be aware of that break-in is weird in and of itself. But the fact that you don't report it because nothing was stolen is wild, because it's literally a county building. The second part about that's wild is that, okay, now we learn, wait, evidence was actually stolen. So really, the reason why he didn't call the police is because he essentially wanted the evidence stolen from the evidence room. He didn't want anybody to find out about it. This judge needs to be fired. Like, oh my God.
Talk
like
about that conflict is of interest.
Seriously, like so impartial or so partial, not impartial, so partial.
Yeah.
Like so prejudiced. Can't so clear, like just going against like the actual like purpose and point of his job and all the oaths he had to take about, you know, rendering an impartial verdict or whatever. He already has an agenda. And now, in fact, he is covering up crimes that benefit his personal agenda in the scope of his job. I mean, he needs to go to jail?
Yeah. Disbarred at the least.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So he already knew that that's exactly what this was. So he didn't report it just so that we can have an excuse for Nancy to investigate. Because that's the only like chain of events that could have happened to lead Nancy to be the only one qualified to look into this. the police don't need to know. Anyway. Also, that AW key, the key that's in the shape of the letters AW that we found after the theft of the book at Mosum Castle, that was also stolen from the evidence room. So whoever stole the book from Mosum Castle is probably also responsible for the evidence room break-in if this key was connected to both.
Right.
Very interesting. So we get finished speaking to the judge and we get a call from Tegan. She is absolutely frantic. She says, come quick. Something terrible has happened. So we speed back to the Perry house and we see that the house has been vandalized. Someone has spray painted a ton of horrible messages all over it, like liars. And effectively, we learn that it has come out that that they are associated with Reverend Paris, that the Perry family did change their name from Paris to distance themselves from everything that happened in the witch trials. So Tegan tells us, yeah, it's all true. So all these messages are calling them like liars and frauds. And they're like not on the side of the AW and everything, even though Tegan is working with AW or working for AW.
She's like the president of the group or something.
Right. Yeah. So she is like, how can I, you know, I'm such a fraud. How can I have been descended from the person who caused all this issue and still associate myself with like the accusers, the victims of these crimes and like want that justice? Again, I don't see how you can be like someone in modern day and like choose the right side and be told like, oh, you're not allowed to like be on our side because your ancestors were on the wrong side of history. Like,
well, I think the purpose of it is supposed to be that like she lied, that like she knew about her ancestry and was never like transparent about it with this group. And so made it seem like she was a victim of the witch trials when really she probably benefited from them. Her family, at least. Why did
she feel like she needed to lie?
Well, I think she tells us, she explains, I don't know if she explains now or later, but she explains that she didn't know, she didn't realize until she started digging into her genealogy because of her association with the accused witches group.
And so then she didn't lie. She just didn't know.
Exactly.
That's weird to me. I don't know. I think modern day, like, it's not your fault what your ancestors did, and it's up to you to just like choose to be on the right side of history, and that's what she's done. So I don't I mean, if it had been like she's keeping a secret from somebody, that would be a different story. But if she genuinely didn't know and then found out and is now trying to make up for the crimes of the past, that's
out and then she didn't tell anybody, right? So it's like in that way she's quote-unquote lying about it, but it's
it doesn't make her the oppressor, though. No. She's still like choosing to like make up for the past.
Yeah, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that people would vandalize her house for this. You know what I mean? I mean, like, there might be some like side eye, and there might be like some contention like within the group, like of the AW accused witches group, and being like, look, maybe you shouldn't like lead us, you know? But like, I don't think someone would vandalize her house.
Yeah.
That's extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But
so, yeah, it didn't really make a lot of sense to me, but this has happened. So now, you know, just another aspect of the mystery. Yeah. I don't know that we learn who did this in the end.
No.
You know, obviously, we can just assume it's characters we never meet. It's probably just people from this group, the AW group, that are mad at her or whatever. But whatever. So we, at this point, we call Frank for an update and we switch to Frank's point of view. So now we get to play as Frank Hardy.
So this is getting pretty long. This might be a good place to stop here. But we are going to have part two available right now, actually.
So we'll see you in part two.